You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company. Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall here for a brand new golfing week. We've got two events this week with the D&D Czech Masters and of course the second event in the FedEx Cup Series as well this week. That is the BMW Championship. Dave Tindall sitting opposite me here in the studio. Good to see you again, Mr. Tindall.
Hello Dave. Yeah, we were just off air having a bit of a moan, weren't we, to each other that we didn't back Patrick Reed.
Yeah, I if you ever had a webcam in the studio, basically, I think we both write down a list of players, and I've got notes on a number of players each and every week, and Patrick Reed was around about fifth on the list, and didn't back him last week, so yeah, I was cursing on Sunday night, and I was hoping that John Rahm was going to beat Patrick Reed comfortably, and it looked like after 13 it was Rahm's event to lose, and just made a couple of silly bogeys towards the end. And Patrick Reed, I thought it was an impressive comeback because he looked shaky at the start of Sunday's round, and eventually prevailed by one from Abraham Ancer.
Yeah, he did really well, doesn't he? Reed must have when he's in contention, he must convert a lot more than the average player. It's just, I mean, when he first came on the scene and he won quite events quite quickly, he'd got a WGC event quite quickly as well, didn't he? And then he won this event a couple of years ago when he sort of had to get on the President's Cup team, or the Ryder Cup team maybe it was.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of, all those things are in your head as you're seeing him come down the stretch. I thought Rahm would just go away and win by a couple and then messed up. I don't know what it is, just lost concentration or...
Yeah, it seems that Rahm, he's obviously...
playing brilliant,
and a masterful closer as well.
Yeah.
In terms of when he's a few back on the leaderboard going into Sunday, that's maybe the time to catch him when he's 16-20-1 going into a final round.
And clatter of hoofs and he's coming at you. But when he's in front, he might look around a bit maybe. I don't know.
Do you think he needs a set of blinkers? Is that what you're saying?
It's very horse racing analogist, isn't it, this?
Yeah, and you highlighted it there, and they were talking about it on Sky Sports as well. Got a commendable record. Patrick Reed, when he's the 54-hole leader, doesn't often go away from the field, but he's a serious grinder, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he just hangs in there, doesn't he? It's like he just does enough and just, you know, fights it out. And I think he almost prefers that, doesn't he? I think he'd almost get bored if he was six clear. I've noticed the fighting qualities wouldn't come to the fore, but when he's got people around him, he can sort of battle it out, and that's his thing, isn't it?
And it's that image of Captain America winning with Lady Liberty overlooking as well.
Well, yeah, and all
New York.
Little
I think he probably does help him though, the crowd. I think they probably energise him.
Yeah, definitely feeds off crowds, doesn't he, like that? And having won that event before, then any time he's around New York and he's getting that reminder that, you know, he is Captain America, then watch out for him.
Golf course a bit.
Yeah.
Every hole looks the same, doesn't it? Yeah. I'm not saying it's a bad golf course.
You take away the nice views and put that somewhere else, it's like, whatever.
Yeah, I think so. Shall we get stuck into this week?
Yes, let's do that.
Got a couple of events to preview this week. We'll start with the D&D Real Czech Masters 2019. Co-favourites of three, actually, here at William Hill, 12-1. Eddie Pepperell, Lee Westwood and Bernd Wiesberger. Eric Van Rooyen is 14s. Thomas Peters, 18-1, along with Andrea Pavan. Robert McIntyre is also 18s. Tom Lewis, 25s. Gavin Green and Julian Surrey are both 28-1. And it's 50-1 and bigger the rest. And it might not be the highest profile event on the schedule, but it's a welcome return to the European Tour after a short hiatus. And at least we've got some consistency with the venue this week as well. Albatross Golf Club has hosted this championship since the tournament's inception back in 2014. And it's a pretty standard parkland course that measures 7,467 yards on the scorecard. And winning totals have ranged from 13 under to 22 under. And looking at the skill set at the Albatross Golf Club, you're thinking about decent putting and taking advantage of those par fives?
Yes, they were the two that came out for me. Putting in particular, the five winners were all ranked in the top four for putting average when they won. So it really is an important stat, that one. Another little angle, maybe. It's been good for first-time winners.
Yeah.
Three of the last four, Pavan, Paul Peterson, Thomas Peters, were all winning for the first time. Hayden Porteous for the second time. So it's a good event for those looking to get either on the board or get another one in.
Yeah, and I'd favour bombers personally over plotters, given that Thomas Peters, who won here a few years ago, said that this is a course that really suits his eye because he can just hit driver off pretty much every tee. And making the score around the turn, those holes 9, 10 and 12, the par 5s.
Yeah, they can fast, don't they?
Yeah, and that can change the dynamic of a round, can't it, really?
Absolutely. Although, if you're looking for a shorty, obviously you see the name Paul Peterson winning, and there's your evidence that it can be done.
Mm. I quite like this event from a betting perspective. I've got a couple of picks here.
Yeah, I've got two.
Okay. Do you want to fire away?
Okay. Playing the first, winning for the first time angle, someone I think's close to getting a first win. He's not an amazing price this week, but I do like him. I do think he's a big talent who could go far. Gavin Green.
Yeah. I've left it.
Not on your list, but close.
No, he's third on my list.
Okay, right.
I've gone two and he was the other one. I was put off by the price.
Yes.
I just looked at the players around him in the betting and thought, is it maybe just a touch skinny? But isn't it?
Yeah, when I did the big sort of, let's check the prices and where is it? I was thinking, if he's 33, fine. And he was 20, and I thought, oh, God, here we go. What to do? But then I thought, well, I would really, really kick myself heavily if he does win. I mean, he was third on his debut last year, opened with a 64. That was great. Big hitter. Good on the par fives.
Yeah.
Great recent form. Top tens in three of his last five events, that Belgian knockout, Andalusia Masters, which shows he can control his ball as well. Mm. Ninth in the Irish Open. They're very different courses, those three, and shows kind of what a talent he is. He doesn't just turn up at some sort of easy birdie fest type thing. I think he's got a lot of game
definitely
going for him. So I think he just dropped so many hints that his turn is going to come soon. First in greens in regulation at the Irish Open was another nice little, you know, pointer that he's really in good nick, and great, really good strong player. I think we could see a lot more of him.
Yeah, I agree. I suppose the only reservation this week is because a lot of these players have had 3 or 4 weeks off, it's difficult to know with absolute certainty if they're going to carry on their strong runs. That's my only
that applies
hesitation.
To so many,
it
doesn't
does
it?
Apply to so many this week.
Yeah, it's tricky. And then a lot of those who have been playing, perhaps their results don't look great because they've been playing in higher grade events.
Yeah.
And
Yeah,
so tricky from that point of view. And I did think about, you know, looking at players' first start after like 5 weeks off or first start of a season, but works to some extent, but then does playing well at the start of January equate to playing well in mid-August?
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Mm. I'm going towards that sort of range in the market for my first bet here. Tom Lewis is my pick at 25 to 1.
Came back to form, didn't he, at the Open?
That was a good performance, wasn't it? Because a string of slightly disappointing results preceded that. 11th at Royal Portrush. That was a big week for him, and I think it will set him up nicely for an end-of-season run, and this is where he performs best, really, at the end of the season. And these are conditions in which he thrives. His three wins, one on the Challenge Tour and two, obviously, in the Portugal Masters, his two European Tour successes, have come with totals of sub-20 under. And I think you'll probably need that this week, looking at the weather conditions. It seems set fair throughout the 4 days.
Yeah.
And not much wind to speak of. 10, 11 miles an hour, the strongest winds you're going to get.
I'm guessing those kind of discrepancy in scores were wind-based.
Yeah, I think they must have been. And Lee Westwood, you
I put a quote up where he says, if there's no weather to defend it, it's kind of absolutely there, isn't it, for 20 under plus.
I think we might get the lowest ever total at this event this year, looking at the weather forecast. And, Lewis has got strong form at this venue as well. Finished third in 2017, took sixth place last year. And I think two wins in Portugal show there are certain courses that really fit his eye. And obviously this is definitely one of them, which is another added bonus. He's a real bomber. got these greens figured out, hugely talented player, and I thought 25-1 was fair enough in this field.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with that. It kind of, when you put it like that, I'm thinking my Gavin Green didn't look as good at 28 somehow.
Gavin Green's got the potential to yes. be a Tom Lewis type player, but I think Lewis has he's kind of shown it, hasn't he?
Yeah, I do like the fact that Lewis, this was when he started his run, wasn't it? These last few months of, well, not quite at the end of the year, but it's when he really came on strong. And as you say, that those performances on sunny par 72s.
Parkland courses, yeah. kind of thing. Mm. I know the Portugal Masters is more of a pure resort course, isn't
yeah.
it? But I think this is one that you can obviously get at.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping he carries on that good form that he showed in Royal Port, which I suppose you've got with Gavin Green and Tom Lewis. Lewis has only got that one real piece of recent form,
yeah.
whereas Gavin Green's got more of a,
yeah.
You know, the last 5-6 weeks he's got, well, last five events, three top 10 finishes, as yeah, you mentioned, sort of like that counterbalances
yeah, yeah, yeah.
it. Yeah. Second selection?
Yeah, I'm going for another player with course form. We seem to be leaning on that quite heavily. Scott Jameson.
Yeah.
Again,
50s.
I prefer 66s, obviously, and that's the kind of price you have in mind for someone like him, maybe. But I think when you look at it, the 50s is pretty good, or acceptable, shall we say. Ninth on debut in 2014, closed with a 64. Fourth last year, which was a really good knock as well. Definitely a player who can sort of shoot low numbers. I seem to just recall him shooting 63s a few times. And we saw him shoot a 64 in his last event. That was the Scottish Open, second round 64. Finished 26th there, which was okay. 15th as well at Andalusia, two starts before. So he's got a nice mix of current and course form. And then I was having a peruse of the European Tour strokes game putting stats.
Yep.
And started rolling my eye down there. And there he is at number five.
Okay.
Which I think, unless our friend Barry Henson's playing, might be the...
He is playing Barry
Henson. Is
he?
Oh, right,
yeah.
Well.
He's around about 300-1, I think.
There you go, a little hint if you want to play a side market, maybe. But fifth, I was thinking, is he the kind of highest ranked player in strokes game putting in the field? But if old Barry's there...
150s he is.
Oh, right.
So maybe not as big a prize as you expected.
Yes. But when you add that to Jameson's course record and his decent current form, the fact that his putter is working so well, I think then you begin to understand the 50s a little bit more.
Yeah.
And he's played well, hasn't he? A man open as well. He was going really nicely there, but closed with a 75, still got a top 10 there. So he's someone who just pops up from time to time. He's not the most consistent golfer in the world, but he's got certain tracks he likes, and I think this is one of them.
Yep, okay. Scott Jameson at 50-1 for DT. I'm going in with a 50-1 shot as well. All here. Right. Adrianos is my pick.
Yes.
The Spaniard. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Well, you said it so fast, I was thinking I went for the surname, but you've thrown in both together.
Yeah, Adrianos. I think it's Arnos.
Anus? No.
Definitely not that.
Might be the Basque way of saying it. Who knows? You might change his name if this is the cut, but... Yes, there is.
Is there a 50-1?
If you're playing a sort of wordplay game, you can get it in there.
Yeah, just about. I don't think this course will take that much knowing. It's his course debut, Adrianos. And
sounds like he's deliberately trying yeah. not to say it, isn't it?
He's obviously one of the long hitters. Comes into this in very good form. Second place finish at Valderrama is top class, obviously. Followed that with a 15th at the Irish Open. Did miss the cut of the Open Championship, but that's not a problem for me. I think the star of the future should be well suited by a low scoring test, and I thought he was worth a pop at 50-1.
Yeah, if you look at his record, it's either something pretty good or rubbish.
Yeah. Missed,
but that's...
Do you think he's just learning on the job, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what you kind of get. But the fact that two of his last three are second and 15th.
Yeah.
That is impressive. And the miscut on his last start was in the Open, mm-hmm. so you can forgive him that. But yes, well done, Adri Arnaus.
Arnaus. I'm going to say...
That's very safe.
I'm
then,
going Arnaus. Yes. Arnaus from now on. what about the head of the market? 12-1 co-favourites of three, Pepperell, Westwood, Wiesberger. I was actually quite surprised how... well, Pepperell comes out on like the stats you're looking at, par 5 scoring and putting this week,
yeah.
because You always think of Pepperell as maybe wanting more of a technical test kind of thing.
But he always comes here, doesn't he? He must like Prague.
He did comment that he needs to stay off Twitter. That's why he's decided to travel to the Czech Masters after some comments about slow play and Bryson DeChambeau.
Yes.
What do you make of that, very quickly? DeChambeau kind of being scapegoated a little bit. I mean, he's
the latest. Sometimes, it was all about JB Holmes at the Open. Someone takes the turn in the spotlight, don't they? So it's not...
And it's always going to be a high-profile player.
Jordan Spieth has had it at times. Patrick Cantlay's had it at times.
When the cameras are on these players, and particularly, I think PGA Tour Live highlights this most of all because you're following a specific group and there's only six players in focus.
There's no cutting away.
So you get all of it. And that's where it's highlighted most. So you get a 2.5 minute clip of DeChambeau lining up a 10-foot putt. Whereas if that was in the coverage, you wouldn't see all that preamble. You'd just see him taking.
Having
a look at the green book and making the putt missing the putt.
I wonder if there's less sympathy for him because he plays up to all this science sort of gobbledygook or brilliant stuff, however you look at it.
Yeah.
And therefore, there's a part where he just thinks, he's sort of checking the sort of rotation of the moon or something. Just get on with it, kind of thing.
I think that's definitely a factor. I do think that the inception of PGA Tour Live does highlight these things as well. So I think it's twofold. And as you said, I think he's the latest cab off the rank, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the latest one. But just that extra element, because he does all this scientific, he has to have everything right. Does it look like... is he more of an obvious slow play contender because he faffs about measuring everything?
And I am warming to Brooks Koepka with each and every passing week because he doesn't mind getting involved, does he?
No. The other clip I liked on social media this week was McIlroy having a go at Matt Kuchar.
That was fantastic, saying,
well,
wasn't it?
Yeah. We know what money means to you.
And
we really do, don't we?
Koepka was in absolute stitches, wasn't he, as well? So I'm liking a little bit of...
A little edge.
Yeah, a little bit of edge there. It's good. I can't wait for the President's Cup pairings this year for the American team. They'll beat the internationals no matter what pairing they put out. But
the captain we got on, he doesn't like him, does he? Oh, he doesn't like him. And...
There'll be a lot of A times B times C times that sort of thing. It'll take a bit of working out this year.
The wild cards would just be
the Tiger.
Who's their best mates of the three? He can't pair up with anybody.
Where were we? Well, we're talking about Eddie Pepperell, weren't we?
Yes, in the front of the market.
Yeah.
He's got good credentials, obviously. Thomas Peters. Westwood's played it well before. And seems to be just fourth at the Open, wasn't he, Westwood?
Yeah.
Westwood had this light schedule, which makes you think he's got some petrol in the tank for these later events.
Yeah.
So just the price is a bit...
And you can see Erik van Rooyen going. I can see him going well. I mean, he's going to win soon, isn't he?
Yeah,
we keep saying this. But
if we're looking at potential first-time winners, he's got to be one of those close to that.
Yeah. Any others you want to mention just before we move on?
I think we've covered quite a lot of them. As I say, have a look at the putting stats. Jeff Winter was the other one, maybe. I think we're 66s. He's 19 strokes gained putting this year. And if you look at his course form... It's good, 27th, 25th, 9th, but the 27th and the 25th, he was kind of halfway leader in one and fourth with a round to go in the other, so it's a bit better than it even looks.
Yeah.
And he's having his best season on the European Tour, lots of top 25s he could go in.
Okay.
Each way possibility.
Four selections between myself and Dave then for the event in the Czech Republic this week. Let's move on to the PGA Tour tournament. The BMW Championship, which is the second event in the FedEx Cup Series, and this tournament hosted by Medina Country Club, the number three course at Medina, and it's 8-1 the field with Rory McIlroy and Brooks Koepka at the top of the betting here with William Hill. John Rahm is 10-1, Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson both 14s, Justin Rose is 16-1, Patrick Cantlay and Webb Simpson both 20s, 25-1. And bigger the rest. And this brings back some memories. Apologies to those listening stateside, but Medina was the backdrop for one of the most memorable sporting comebacks in recent history, dubbed The Miracle at Medina. Team Europe trailed 10-6 going into the Sunday singles in the Ryder Cup 2012, but Europe, led by Jose Maria Olazabal, came back and won 14.5 to 13.5, and I'm sitting opposite a man that was there at the 2012 Ryder Cup. That must be... must have been the greatest sporting event you ever attended.
When I'm an old man, or older man, shall we say, sat on a bench somewhere, slightly losing his marbles, and someone says, "What's your best sporting event that you've ever been to?" That's for me would be it, unless something else happens brilliant in the next however many years. But that was just extraordinary that week. The atmosphere, I mean, it was so... It's a massive sports town in Chicago, and which is great, and so the atmosphere there was incredible. But because there was a certain line, and some of the crowd, they don't handle their Bud Lights very well, do they, the Americans? And they couldn't... Some of them just got really beyond saying terrible stuff about Seve.
It was
appalling. There are idiots everywhere. So
I didn't hear much of that in the aftermath. Was that something that was... Obviously, the talk was about the triumph of Team Europe, but I didn't...
Well, it got brushed aside because Europe won, kind of thing, but had it not, I mean, Europe would have been chip on their shoulder forever about it, because it was appalling, some of it. Because it was a Olazabal, they were having to go at Seve in a horrible way because that's his mate, the late Seve. So it was, you know... And I'm sure some Americans will say they've had some awful stuff chucked at them because, as I say... Idiots do walk in all corners of the globe. But that was nasty. It was really horrible at times. So you could see how it just fed into someone like Ian Poulter, who's, you know, they couldn't have done anything worse. Prodding him with a stick, you know, stirred a hornet's nest. And he played that incredible, was it five birdies in a row he made in the four, was it with McIlroy, wasn't it, in the four sums or four balls? To get, yeah, with it, to have a squeak of a chance on that Sunday, and then of course they did. It was just absurd.
Yeah, and you, like you put the numbers to it, 10-6 after the Saturday session, you think, oh well, they're only 4 points behind, but the enormity of that cannot be understated, because it's the largest comeback in Ryder Cup history. You just don't come back from 4 points down going into the Sunday singles. It doesn't happen.
No, because they've only got to get...
They're down to four and a half points to win.
Yeah, so it's just... And the way it was going, I mean, they'd set... This is a key point for this week. They set that course up without any rough.
Yep.
Which is absolutely fair enough and a good thing to do, because we set up the Golf National with a load of rough to thwart them. It was just, if you're an American, it was an absolute dream first 2 days off, 1 3/4 first 2 days.
Yeah.
Where Keegan Bradley and Mickelson were a great pairing, and they were just doing everything right, and it just looked like, oh no, we're going to get absolutely hammered here. And then it just flipped. So I have to say, it is part of my thinking this week.
Well, what's your overriding memories of the golf course? Because it's a long course. It measures over 7,600 yards, plays to a par of 72, but a lot of the yardage is taken up by three of the par fives, which are close to 600 yards. And it doesn't strike me as a venue you can necessarily overpower. A lot of the players have talked about tight dog legs. It is obviously tree-lined, and the rough will be up more than it was in the Ryder Cup back in 2012. And of course, it's hosted the PGA Championship a couple of times as well in recent history, in 1999 and 2006. And Tiger Woods won both those. And not only can I remember, obviously, the Miracle at Medina back in 2012, but that iconic moment with Sergio Garcia, stuck behind the tree and playing that huge cut into one of the holes where he's not... You've got that image of him looking...
Skipping along.
Yeah, looking in a different direction when he strikes the ball and then skipping up the fairway. So it's produced some iconic moments, this golf course.
It has, and if you look at those two events, the USPGAs in 99 and 2006, Tiger won them both, which that doesn't really tell you anything, but Sergio was then fifth in 2006. Mike Weir was in the top five, a fifth and a tenth.
Yeah.
Even though there's a gap in time, the course form did stand up well. So therefore, I'm thinking, if you've played well at Medina in the Ryder Cup, I'm giving you an extra sort of tick in the box there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of water in play. As you say, I don't think you can overpower it. I mean, the leading point scorer, which we'll come on to, was not a big hitter in that week. I think Jason Duffner as well was joint top point scorer for the Americans, not a big hitter. I wouldn't focus on that. I think that's a bit misleading, especially because now the rough is up this week. So I think you've got to, you know, drive it straight as well.
I've got two selections.
Yeah, me too.
Go ahead.
Well, if I'm playing the Ryder Cup angle, there's only one name, isn't there? Ian Poulter.
I'm going with Ian Poulter as well this week, actually.
And even if you think that is nonsense, that 7 years ago, it's not. Nonsense. I'll tell you now, because he will go back there and he will just, you know what he's like. He feeds off all that kind of stuff that you can think of as, you know, not technically. It's just mind stuff that he feeds off.
Yeah, it's the intangibles, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And he had such an incredible week 7 years ago that he will, everyone will remind him of it. He'll remind everyone of it himself. But it's not just that, is it, with Poulter this week? Because talking about Medina form as well, he was ninth there, which was a little tip that he would play well in Ryder Cup. He was ninth there in the 2006 USPGA.
Yeah.
So clearly this is a course he likes. He got 4 points out of five to top score from both teams in the Ryder Cup. So he's got all the course stuff sorted out and the intangibles and the memories and all that. But his current form is really good too, isn't it, as well? For someone who's finished 8th at St Jude and 10th in the Northern Trust. You bang at it, aren't you? Bang in form.
I think it's the iron player that's just been so solid.
Yeah. Yeah. That can sometimes you think, oh, that might let him down a little bit, but it's been superb. And you can add a bit in a set. But the final thing I'd say is Poulter, when he's on a mission, he goes up God knows how much in the weights, because he is trying to get into that top 30 who qualify for the Tour Championship next week, and he's 43rd. What a brilliant incentive it is for him, isn't it, to climb those 13 places. And he's not going to do it by finishing 11th. He's got to have a pretty big week to get in there.
Yeah.
And I think that will just feed into his psyche perfectly.
Yeah. He ranked 5th in tee to green last week at Liberty National, and that came on the back of that 8th at the FedEx St Jude. He was also 3rd in strokes gained approach last week. I just think he needs a better week with the putter.
Well, he was 2nd in strokes gained putting at St Jude, yeah. So... If he can marry those two up.
Yeah, and he puts the ball in play off the tee. I think 50s is fair on Poulter.
Yeah, I don't know why. It could easily be shorter if you put it all together, the evidence, couldn't
I suppose
it?
It's such a strong field.
But he could have been a sort of 40s and we're obviously ducking him, but 50s is doable, isn't it? Takeable. Yep.
Second selection for you?
Is that your Poulter? Well, again, I'm totally going down the Ryder Cup route, Justin Rose.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I tipped Justin Rose last week.
Yes. Well, and I was sort of a bit sort of sceptical, about Rose last week. But he did pretty well, didn't he? I didn't see a lot of him.
No, he touched 5-1 on Sunday to win the event. Then got to the par 5 6th and inexplicably hit it in the water from 180 yards, and that was tournament over. And he talked about last week how he didn't take advantage of the par 5s and that was costly, and if he'd have played the par 5s as well as some of the leaders did, he'd have been bang in there.
Yeah.
My only hesitation with selecting Rose for this week is just too many wayward iron shots last week, and that's something you mentioned last week, actually. That's costing him his chance. And
I mean, it's difficult. You look at his last four events, 10th, 11th, 20th and 3rd.
Yeah.
And the 20th became 20th at the Open Championship, where he shot 79 in bad conditions.
Yeah.
We're not getting bad conditions this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's good enough where he could maybe just sort it on the range one week if he just gets a swing thought that completely clicks.
I mean, his putting has been a revelation this season since he's made the switch to Phil Kenyon.
Yes.
And he's doing work with him, and he's become the preeminent putting coach, hasn't he, basically?
Yeah.
And
Gary Woodland.
His numbers have gone through the roof this this year, Justin Rose. Since he started that work, it's just been a stratospheric trajectory towards the top of the game in terms of strokes game putting.
Yeah, I mean, this event as well. I mean, he won it at Coghill in 2011, BMW Championship, and he's finished runner-up the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Aronim Inc. and Conway Farm. So he does seem to come alive.
Conway Farms is Chicago as well, isn't it, I think?
That's right, yes. Yeah.
Is Coghill Chicago as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, loves Chicago. And obviously, to just flesh out the Ryder Cup angle, if you recall, his game was massively pivotal against Mickelson. He won the final two holes to go one down to win it from nowhere.
Put on 16 or 17?
A massive putt across 17.
17, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then I remember, indulge me here, I remember climbing up on some media tower, and there was only me up there with Paul Haywood, the brilliant writer,
yeah,
who said, "Hello,
Telegraph.
I'm Paul."
Yeah,
I went, "I know, but you don't know who I am, and you never will." And so I shook his hand, and then we had a chat, and then it was just as Rose was putting for the win on 18. So I've got a wobbly handheld bit of video at home where it's really still, and then the holes are putting my arm just starts flailing around. But it's obviously a very strong memory of him. Just, I mean, everything was vital at that stage, and for him to turn that round was brilliant.
Well, and my memory is where Martin Kaymer has to make par on the last with Molinari and Woods in the group behind, and you think he's about 25 feet away, and you're thinking, just lag this to 2 feet.
Oh, he knocks it 6 feet,
knocks it 6 feet by, and you're thinking,
that was awful.
Head in hands, what are you doing? And then he just drills it straight in the middle.
Yeah.
There's so many fantastic memories of that week.
And then the other one was McIlroy nearly missed his tee time. Do you remember that?
I do. That's and he met his future wife that morning.
Yes.
After Sunday, Erica Stoll. So this is a big week for McIlroy as well, who's at the top of the betting 8-1. You can see him he's playing brilliantly at the moment, isn't he, McIlroy?
Yes. He's another one. I mean, Molinari is not in good enough form to really cash in, but McIlroy, he could certainly, if you're going down the great memories route.
Yeah, and just the current form.
McIlroy,
just being Rory McIlroy, the current form. You sort of think of him like sliding out of contention a little bit at the moment because he's putting himself bang there every Sunday, even without his A game at the moment, McIlroy. And it's just testament to his ability that he's still in contention when he's not quite on it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely no surprise if he wins. And he loves the playoffs, doesn't he? He can get up ahead of steam suddenly. Yeah. You know, there are only 1 week left now. So he'll be thinking, get myself in position to be that leader who starts at 10
under. $15 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So Justin Rose, your second pick at 16-1.
Yes.
I'm going with an Englishman, so we're all English this week. I'm going Paul Casey as my second selection at 40-1.
Had the week off, didn't he?
Yeah, and I have a few doubts about Casey's ability to get the job done in such a big event. But he stands out statistically for me this week, and I thought each way 40-1 was an okay price. He did skip last week, as you mentioned, which could work one or two ways. I wouldn't be unduly concerned about it. And he won at the Copperhead course earlier in the year, and I thought it was interesting that Josh Culp, in his piece for Roto World, highlighted the Copperhead course as one that could correlate very well with this one, because it's a tree-lined course, not driver off the tee necessarily, quite a long track, and I thought that was interesting. And Casey won at the Copperhead course earlier on in the season.
For the second time in a row,
at Innisbrook. And he ranks 9th off the tee and 9th on approach on tour this season, which are amazing numbers when you think about it. And I'm looking for an all-round game at Medina. And his numbers at the Wyndham and Southwind on his last two starts have been very good. And I thought he was just a bet at the prices. So 40-1, Paul Casey, my second selection.
He's a better 40-1 shot than Tiger Woods, I have to say.
Yeah.
How is he only 40-1?
I'll be fascinated to see.
Can't move, can he?
Well, no, he doesn't look that way, does it? I mean, I just think is a withdrawal more likely than a win, you'd say? Definitely.
Yeah, in a match bet, I'd definitely play the withdrawal by a mile.
Yeah.
I don't know why he just doesn't call it a day for the year.
But I think if he calls
Or even have this... Well, is he in the Tour Championship regardless?
No, he's right on the fringes, yeah. He needs a good week this week to make the Tour Championship.
Yeah.
You can never say never with Tiger Woods. And if the withdrawal last week was just a precaution, and he just talks about, you can't hang on to every single word he says and takes it as absolute gospel, but he's just talking at the moment about having different days where some days he's stiff, some days he feels really loose. If he gets there and the weather's perfect for him, temperatures, I don't know what it's meant to be in Chicago.
Decent.
But yeah, it's probably in the 70s, 80s. And the sun's hitting his back and he feels loose and fresh, comes to a course that he knows very well, he's won twice at. Maybe Tiger can play well this week. I would never say never with Tiger.
I mean, it's a course he's won twice on, so it's one of his courses, but I don't know, it's just a bit astonishing if he gets anywhere near the lead.
Would you be more astonished with him winning this week, or obviously winning this week, than the Masters, because he went into the Masters in decent nick, didn't he?
This would seem more of a, how has he managed that?
But do you view this as a, do you think Tiger can shut it down in his, to use his terminology, come back next season and still perform at the highest level? Or do you think that this is it?
No, because, well, we've written him off before, so I'm not, certainly not doing that. But I just think in terms of the rest of this year, he's a goner and nothing's going to happen. I can't see anything happening for him.
Yeah.
You know, but just celebrate that 2019, what a year for Tiger, whatever happens from now on.
Okay, we've been through our selections. A quick word at the top of the betting. We talked about Rory McIlroy got a big chance. Yeah. Brooks Koepka. Maybe he used last week as a warm-up for this week, going into the Tour Championship.
I would rather back him next week.
Yeah. You're not going to get much of a prize when he's leading by a couple.
Yeah, I
suppose. If he does top the list.
But it's just, you just sort of, you rank him in terms of how important he thinks the event is. So this is kind of the one before the big one.
Mm. Okay.
So I wouldn't play him at eights. Rahm's tens, you can't really argue with it. I mean, he might pick up the good vibes from the Europeans and say, oh, I don't know, how old would he have been, but in 2006?
No idea off the top of
imagine
my head.
Imagine he'll have a pretty good understanding of what happened.
Yes.
He might well have watched it as an excited teenager and thought, this is brilliant. Dustin Johnson's just a bit off, isn't he? I don't know what he's up to at the minute. He's just a bit flattering to deceive.
Justin Thomas?
Well, I keep waiting for it to happen, and it's not, so I'm sort of losing a bit of patience.
Yeah, I think he'll go well. I mean, his approach play continues at that elite level, but I think 14-1.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit skinny.
Yeah, I think he could be much, obviously, better form and be 14-1, or getting better results and be 14. The area I looked at more of was around 66s. There was a few around there. I liked Abraham Anser. I think he might be one of these who just comes alive in the playoffs.
Last week, he
booked his Tour Championship place. He booked his President's Cup place. You could argue this is a complete free hit.
Yeah. And he was statistically on last week, wasn't he?
Yeah, I saw an interview with Adam Scott where they said, will he be good on the team? And he went, yeah, he'll be great, because he just, you know, very straight off the tee. He just really likes him. The other one I thought, which maybe ties in with your Valspar idea, or Josh Culp's, was Jason Kokrak, who's got some really good form there.
He'd be the next one on my list, actually.
And he's in good form again.
Got such a strong tee to green game. It just all depends what he does with as any week, depends what he does with the putter. Because he can look like a foreign object in his hand, can't he, on occasion?
So he could run into a place, but I'm a little bit put off by that. Ryan Maude, another one, I think he's got a good chance. He played well in the playoffs before, played well at Medina in the USPGA in 2006. Looks like he's tied 18th last two events. He's someone I like the look of at 66s. But yeah, that was more the area I was looking at rather than the 20 odds. Webb Simpson, that crack driver did him in last week.
Yeah, well, I thought you might have been on Webb again this week.
Well, I don't know what if that was his favourite driver and he's having to now play a sort of one that's been given to him.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all similar specs, aren't they? But they can just feel, you know. I don't know. Maybe his good run is just going to dip for a week, maybe.
And Patrick Reed, 25-1, he's not on the President's Cup team yet.
Yeah, that's dangerous. Makes him dangerous, doesn't it, that?
He's 12th in the standings.
Yeah.
He'd get a pick anyway, wouldn't he? But he won't be thinking like that.
No. I don't know. Have you ever seen him play brilliantly 2 weeks in a row? Or
I think it's... I don't know, to tell you the truth off the top of my head. I'd have to look back through his
figures. But even someone, if someone, you know, could... The Ryder Cup thing could come in his head as well this week.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll show him kind of thing.
It'd be interesting to see the groupings this week, won't it?
You know, that'd be very... Whether they sort of...
Yeah, who gets paired with who.
It, yeah.
Yeah.
What about Spieth?
Oh, that... I still think there's too many down. I think he'll miss too many balls off the tee, and I think that might, on a tree line track like this, I think he might be punching out on quite a few occasions.
Yeah, he's 28. Louis Yu says, "No, I have no idea when to back or where and how, and I just get him wrong." In theory, this would be somewhere where I would back him. He was runner up at the Valspar.
Yeah, and.
Playing well.
I played really well last week.
Yeah.
But you just...
But then he'll just...
He gets into contention and you just think, he's not going to win, is he?
Yeah.
And he doesn't.
No, unless he's playing at home in South Africa.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can pass him by.
Yeah.
Billy Horschel at 40s, playing well. Loves the playoffs.
Yeah, he wasn't razor sharp last week. The putter really helped him out last week.
Yeah.
I mean, his tee to green numbers were...
Which is strange, isn't it?
On the shoddy
way
side.
Around, but yeah, you think if he can get that back.
Yeah.
DeChambeau, is he the temperament where he could be really riled by the criticism?
I think it's going to be a difficult week for DeChambeau because
do you think he'll be out of whack trying to speed up?
I think
he'll
be out of whack. I think he'll be inside his own head, and I think he'll have to feel like a ridiculous amount of questions about his slow play, and that might affect him, and he might not be able to do the work he wants to do, and then, as you mentioned, might feel... I don't think he will feel the need to speed up yet, but he might do. And
I reckon
might...
him and his team will invent a new clock where each minute is actually 40 seconds.
He'll do something,
so
won't he?
He'll trick his brain into thinking he's...
It was his press conference on the back of the slow play furore was strange, I thought, because he said nothing in 5 or 6 minutes worth of chat that made any logical sense. He's talking about like the caddies and running up to the ball and he moves quicker from ball to... Just be ready. I mean, just don't... The big issue is with the slow play, and this is something Koepka's mentioned, players aren't ready, basically. So when in a three ball, they'll wait till player A's hit, player B's hit, then they'll go through their routine. Just know what you're going to do while those other chaps in your group are playing the shots.
Yeah.
And then that will speed up the game.
You think so?
It's not rocket science, is it?
No. Well, although he likes to make it. The one slight interesting one, he's not really playing well enough, but if you go down the fact that sometimes a change in caddy, you know, sparks something. Jason Day's just got rid of Steve Williams.
That's not worked out, has it?
Did you see his quote? His quote was interesting. He said...
Who's Steve Williams or Jason Day's?
Jason Day's quote, he did all the kind of, he's a great guy, and then he just said this little almost barbed comment that sometimes old school versus new school doesn't work, or something along those lines.
Okay.
So it sounds as though Steve Williams has probably tried to get him to run up hills and hit him with a stick or something, and he's thinking, nah, mate, that's...
He's basically saying that the game's changed.
That's what it came across as to me.
It's strange, though, isn't it? Because he brought Steve Williams in.
Yes,
to be more professional and change Jason Day's attitude to a certain extent. So
now
obviously those personalities have clashed, haven't they?
Yeah, Aussie and a Kiwi. and then he's just got a mate on his bag, so that might just loosen him up. He might have been... It's very sort of hard, isn't it, to get the dynamics right, and clearly that one didn't work at all, but he's played well in these sort of courses before and circumstances. But
it's amazing to see him at 50-1, isn't it?
When
a couple of seasons ago he would definitely have been up there with McIlroy, Koepka, Dustin Johnson in that sort of bracket, and fall from grace has been spectacular.
Even if it's a 1 week only, just kind of a breathing out, I've got rid of old Steve, he's done one
at 50-1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's recap the selections for this week then, Dave, starting with your bets in the Czech Republic.
Yeah, so in the Czech Republic, I will go 1.5 each way on Gavin Green at 28s and 1 each way on Scott Jameson at 50s.
Yeah, and I'm going 1 each way Tom Lewis at 25-1, 1 each way Adri Arnaus at 50-1, and in the BMW Championship.
Yes, I will go Justin Rose, let me see. I know 16s is my sort of each way benchmark, but I'm going to go 2 points win.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I'm going to go a point each way, Ian Poulter at 50s.
Yeah, I'll join you. A point each way, Poulter at 50-1. Point each way, Paul Casey as my other bet at 40-1. Dave, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Hopefully you enjoyed some of the reminiscing about the 2012 Ryder Cup. And make sure you check out all the betting at williamhill.com ahead of the golf this week, the BMW Championship, quarter of the odds 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5. And in the Czech Republic, a fifth of the odds 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6, 4 this week. So go to williamhill.com or check out those odds on the app, and make sure you tell your friends about this podcast if you've not already done so as well.
And if you have friends.
Yeah, and myself and Dave, we will be back next week. Anything you want to discuss on Twitter, do tweet us at Dave Tindall Golf and at D Kellner, and enjoy the golf this week. It should be a good one.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.